All right, Psalm 91. We're going to continue looking at this issue of protecting your home, and it's going to take us verse by verse through Psalm 91. There's two things I love to do when I preach. One of them is go verse by verse through Scripture, because that does two things. One, it makes sure that I fulfill that command to preach the whole counsel of the Word of God. And the only way you can do that is to not skip verses and to preach through a Bible verse by verse, as opposed to getting up and just preaching about whatever topic suits my fancy. The second thing is that if I step on somebody's toes during the sermon, I can say, well, I was just preaching through the verses, and that way they shouldn't take offense against me, and that's something I certainly don't want to do, to give offense. I do want to, and in this section of talking about this issue of putting a hedge protection around your family, we looked at the prerequisites for it. We've looked at the prayer protection that both Job prayed and Hosea prayed. We've talked about what the benefits of that were. We've started to talk a little bit about that place of protection. What I want to do is zero in on a specific verse, and that's verse 3. I realized that last time I preached, we kind of got through about verse 7 or 8, and as I was looking at Psalm 91 again this week, verse 3 popped out at me, and I thought, oh, there's stuff there I just totally skipped last time. So because I'm human and I don't want to skip over verses and miss some valuable counsel, we're going to zero in on verse 3, and we're going to talk specifically about traps that ensnare your family. And so we're going to zero in on that particular verse. Let me read you, first of all, a quote by Charles Spurgeon, who was by some called the Prince of Preachers. He said this. He says, "It was once said by a talented writer that the old devil was dead and that there was a new devil now, by which he meant to say that the devil of old times was rather a different devil from the deceiver of these times. We believe that it's the same evil spirit, but there is a difference in his mode of attack. The devil of 500 years ago was a black and grimy thing that well portrayed in our old pictures of that evil spirit. He was a persecutor who cast men in the furnace and put them to death for serving Christ. The devil of this day is a well-spoken gentleman. He does not persecute, he rather attempts to persuade and beguile." And so we're going to focus on verse 3 and a couple interesting things there on that slide. First is the words to a hymn that Charles Spurgeon liked to have sung in his church. And two of the lines to that hymn says, "Satan the fowler who betrays unguarded souls a thousand ways." And that picture that you see there is an inscription from inside one of the pyramids that shows how they trapped birds. And that's an interesting thing, because Psalm 91:3 says this, "Surely he shall deliver thee from the snare of the fowler." And that's what we're going to zero in on. It says, "and from the noisome pestilence." And I did talk a little bit about the pestilence last time, but I totally omitted this idea of a bird being trapped into a net. So what I want to do is describe this trap for you in detail and give you some idea of what this verse means for your family. What kind of traps come to ensnare your family? Now, I don't believe in just being theological in sermons. I like to be practical, so I'm going to give you some practical tips along the way. And you may feel like I'm harping on one or two subjects. If I am harping on something, it's in preparation for heaven, because there's a verse in Revelation that talks about the harpers harping on their harps, literally in Greek. So I'm just getting prepped. You know, I'm going to harp some here so that I can be good at it there. But I want you to understand that when I give specific applications, it doesn't mean that's the only application, and I'm not trying to beat any of you up on a particular subject. I just want to get you thinking about ways that you can look at applying the principle that's in Scripture in your life. So let's look at this particular kind of what it means to be ensnared or trapped. And the idea is this idea of a bird that's being caught in a net. And several characteristics about the trap. Number one is it's a covered trap. In other words, the thing is if you set a trap for an animal, it's best not to make it obvious. I remember a few years ago, some of you may remember this as well, we had an interesting problem here at the church that you came, and every week the entire fellowship hall smelled of skunk. And there were skunks around the church, and apparently some of them had crawled in through a hole and gotten inside the wall, and we could actually see on the outside of the building where they had been going to the bathroom. Well, there's nothing like coming to a church that smells like skunk, not a pleasant thing. So we had to get somebody out here that knew what to do, and they set a trap out there, and at first it didn't work, but the person who set it didn't. They just put basically the steel trap and put some bait in it. Well, the skunk was smarter than that. So in order for the skunk to feel safe, they had to wrap the trap in plastic trash bags so it would appear to be dark, so the cage wasn't obvious, and to the skunk, it just looked like a cool tunnel to crawl in, and we had some grapes and stuff in there, and the skunk eventually did get in there and get the trap, and then some gentleman had the lovely job of coming out and picking up that thing, and I'm wondering, how did they do that without getting sprayed? And I asked him that question, and he said, well, you know, you are able to, you know, if you keep it calm, that tunnel actually makes them feel safe, and they won't spray you. But I let him do it. I didn't volunteer. But at any rate, you cover a trap. And so here we see a trap that's been laid for an animal, and yet it's been covered over with some brush, covered over with some sticks, so that the mode of the trap is not obvious. Now, it says in Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 17, surely in vain is the net spread in the sight of any bird. So if you were going to catch a bird in a net, maybe you're trying to lure, I wish somebody would get those grackles, you know, that are on the top of every telephone wire and every light post in Arlington, Texas. And I wish they'd find a good trap for those, you know. But if you lay out a trap, you've got to put some bait there. And then when you put the bait there, you would need to cover up the net. In other words, don't make it obvious that you're trying to trap it. And so it says, you know, if you put the net where you can see it, you probably aren't going to be very successful. Now, I think it's interesting to read James chapter 1, verses 13 and 14. These are good Bible memory verses for your kids or for you. And these verses also use two rather unique terms. It says, let no man say when he is tempted that I am tempted of God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempteth he any man. But every man is tempted when he's drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Now there's two phrases there you should take note of. It's the phrase drawn away and the phrase enticed. In fact, if you want to make a note in your Bible next to James 1, 13 and 14, let me explain these two terms. The word drawn away is a Greek word that refers to a fishing lure. Now, I remember when I first moved to Nacogdoches, Texas to pastor a church there, one of my deacons had a pond. It was a small pond, but it was about 3/4 acre. And he had an old John boat sitting around he never used for anything, but he claimed that there were fish in there. So I went out the first day that I'd ever been to his pond. I got in the John boat and scooted out in the water, and I didn't know where to go buy live bait. This church was so far out in the country, the road only went to the church twice a week. I went out there and I got out on the water, and I had some lures, and I had this little orange and yellow lure, and it was a topwater lure, so it stayed on the top of the water, and you threw it out and you kind of had to make these little twitches, and it would make this popping of the water right in front of this topwater lure, and that attracted the fish. Well, lo and behold, I caught 7 bass that day, all 3 pounds or better. And I knew, and I'll just go ahead and tell you now, the Lord knew that that was too much of a spiritual challenge for me, and I'd probably never be a faithful pastor because I'd be on that pond all the time. So I probably never caught anything again. I caught a few crappie once in a while, but I never had that same success again. And the reason I didn't is because at the end of this day, I've caught 7 bass, 3 pounds or better, and we had a great fish fry that night. If they're 3 pounds, I don't do catch and release. I do catch and eat. Okay, you just need to understand that. I think at the end of that day, I was casting because I was greedy. 7 was the number of completeness, but I was going for 8, right? And so I threw it. My line went over a tree, and the tree swallowed my lure in a way that I was never to retrieve it again. And try as I might, Walmart never sold anything else that worked as well. Okay. And the other thing was, I made the mistake at some point. I'm going to save you from making the mistake. One of the reasons I like to preach is to try to save you from making the mistakes that I've made. At some point, I put a Bible in my tackle box. Don't ever do that, because then God will expect you to read instead of catch fish. Okay, so I had plenty of time to read the Bible because the fish weren't biting anymore, but that was the Lord's way of getting me to read His Word. This word drawn away, though, means a fishing lure. And the thing about a fishing lure is that to the fish, it looks like food. It looks like something to eat. And there's the deception. What the fish doesn't comprehend is that this lure has hooks on the bottom of it, and the hooks are the consequence that are going to ensnare him, trap him, and put him on my dinner plate. Okay? And so that's the purpose of a lure. It looks good to the appetite, but you don't see the consequences. Now, similarly, the second word, the word enticed in Greek, is a word that refers to an animal trap. It means that you have set a trap for an animal, you put some bait in there, and the bait is so compelling to the animal that they walk right into the trap. And whether it's maybe a trap like this raccoon's in, or maybe it's one of those old cartoon things, although I hear they actually work in real life, where you've got the box propped up on the stick and you've got a carrot underneath the thing, and the bunny hops in there to eat the carrot and pulls the thread, and the box falls over the bunny. Whatever it is, the thing is, the animal focuses on the food and doesn't see the consequences of walking into the trap. And that's what Satan does to us. Satan he covers up the consequences. He hides the consequences. So when you're being tempted by the devil, what you think about is, I can do this and get away with it. Or you're thinking about, oh, if I do this, I get that. But you don't think about the consequences. I'm firmly convinced that David did not understand the consequences of his adultery with Bathsheba. He walks out on top of his palace one day. He sees Bathsheba in an immodest situation because the palace was higher and he's looking down on her roof. And he just says, I want that. And by the way, almost all sins start with something we see, right? Eve, it says, looked upon the fruit and saw that it was good to eat. Okay, so the eye is our primary point of entrance for temptation. And so David looked upon Bathsheba, and immediately he just says, go get her for me, and he takes her. And I'm sure that if he had thought about the fact that before he did that sin, if he thought about the fact he was going to have Uriah the Hittite, who was probably his mightiest warrior, that he was going to have him killed in battle, and then he was going to, that Bathsheba was going to get pregnant, and that everybody would know that Uriah had not been with her because he'd been away to war, and he took a vow not to be with her when he came back while his soldiers were still in the field. And everybody was going to know the king's sin, and then that baby was going to die shortly after its birth. And then that he's going to have one of his sons wind up raping one of his daughters. And then he was going to have one of his other sons kill that son. And then one of his generals was going to kill that son. And he was going to have the kingdom nearly ripped from his hands. I think David would have thought better about what he did had he considered the consequences. But what we don't do when we're tempted very often is consider the consequences. This is why James says, he says, but every man is tempted when he's drawn away of his own sin and enticed. And lust, when it hath finished, bringeth forth sin. In other words, lust conceives. When your desire and your will get together, sin is born. Lust, when it hath conceived, bringeth forth sin. And sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death. It could be death to your testimony. It could be death to your marriage. It could be death to your family life. But trust me, the end of sin is some kind of death that comes. And so it's important for us to understand this principle and understand that the devil likes to do a big cover-up, and that he likes us to only see the temptation without seeing the consequence. But know this, whatsoever you sow, that shall you also reap. Now, that's true of whether you're sowing your tithes and offerings, that you're going to reap God's blessings. You're going to reap God's wisdom. But it's also true that when you sow sin, you're going to get death. Whatever you sow, that you shall also reap. Your family is in particular danger when they fail to consider the consequences of their behavior. Now, here's another verse I'd like you to look at, because I want to talk about the three areas in which the devil tends to attack us the most, because these are the three areas that are most powerful. John tells us, love not the world, neither all that is in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, now listen closely, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. So these are the three kinds of bait that the devil uses. There is the lust of the flesh. Now that's referring to sexual immorality. It's referring to pornography. And pornography is one of the two most addictive sins in America today. I had the privilege a few years ago of speaking in Indianapolis to a conference of about 650 dads. And right before I got up and spake, a dad got up and shared how the Lord had given him victory over an addiction to pornography he had. And he was there and shared with these men, with his wife standing right beside him, about the battle that he had incurred with that and how much it hurt his family. And he understood that the Bible says, whoso confesseth and forsaketh sin, the same shall have mercy. And that word confesseth means to take out from hiding, and to forsake it means to totally put it aside and turn away. And the strength of sin, by the way, is in its secrecy. If you do a sin and you can get away with it without being discovered, it becomes more of a habitual kind of sin. And he talked about the secret nature of online pornography. And after that, I watched as probably 42, 45 men, somewhere in that neighborhood, got up wanting freedom from pornography and publicly confessed pornography and gained God's mercy and forgiveness for that. I tell you what, that it makes it hard to follow an act like that. And I shouldn't use that word in act, but it was quite evident the Spirit was moving in that congregation, and it was a great opportunity for me to minister to those men. It was exciting. The second thing is lust of the eyes. This is the idea of greed. Probably one of the other most addictive sins in the United States today is gambling. And now you can do that online too. You don't have to go anywhere to do it. You can gamble on the internet. Yes, even if you live in Texas, you can do this. So gambling becomes a problem. It's greed and gambling. And the love of money, which is the root of all kinds of evil, the Bible tells us. It's this thing of, I want what's not mine, what God hadn't given me. I want something else. And then the third kind of sin is the pride of life. And this is the pride that says, when bad things happen to me, it says, I didn't deserve this. Why is God letting this happen to me? You get bitter because someone treats you in a way you thought you didn't deserve. Let me just clarify something for all of us so we can all get on the same page on this subject. Every single person in this auditorium deserved eternity in the lake of fire. Do y'all understand that? Y'all know that's true. Why? Because you are a sinner. Okay? It is by the grace of God that hopefully most, if not all of us, will not experience that because we have a relationship with Jesus Christ. So if we have a relationship with Jesus Christ, we are getting better than we deserve. That's why every time somebody asks Dave Ramsey, how are you today? He says, better than I deserve. And that is a theologically perfect answer. I'm better than I deserve. I can say that on my worst day. I'm better than I deserve. Why? Because I'm going to heaven and I don't deserve to be there. There's nothing in my life. But there's this attitude that is promoted, and again, internet promotes this attitude everywhere you look, that you deserve to be treated a certain way, you deserve to be your own boss, you deserve to have everything you want out of life, you deserve to have the nice car and the nice house and the nice career and the big bank account, you deserve all this, and there's hundreds of marketing firms that will sell you everything in an attempt to get you there. But the devil loves for us to be caught up in our pride and thinking, I deserve better than what I have. Now, I mentioned the internet a couple times, so I want to give you some practical information about the internet. By the way, I think there's two unique things about this sermon. First of all, I went out and looked, and I couldn't, out of more than 5,000 commentaries, I couldn't find a single one that wrote more than a sentence or two about Psalm 91, verse 3. So maybe this is unique here that God had have me focus on this verse. The second thing is, not many churches have a pastor who's a software geek, okay? So let me be geeky for just a little bit and give you some ideas. First of all, understand the internet can feed all three kinds of these addictions to your family. You can get pornography within a few clicks. You can gamble online. You can get hurt by something that somebody posts on Facebook or somebody that sends you a crass email. And there's a lot of other kinds of media out there that can foster this idea of bitterness. So I'm going to give you some practical tips. Get on the back of your bulletin. Prepare to write, okay? Let me give some practical tips for how to protect your family from the internet. And any of you that are parents or going to be parents, any of you as husband and wife, you need to protect one another on the internet. So first of all, let's talk about what a domain name service is. When you type in Google.com in your browser bar, the internet doesn't know anything about Google.com. Everything to it is a number. It's a numeric address. And so it has to go look up somewhere to find out what that numeric address for Google.com is. And it goes out to what's called a domain name server. And this is a place that has a list of all those URLs that we type in and what numbers they translate to. So I don't know. I couldn't even tell you what my own server's IP address is right now on the internet. But for example, I know that Southwestern, Bell has a couple of DNS servers, and one of them is 151.164.1.7 and 151.164.1.8. Google has DNS servers 8.8.8.8 and 7.7.7.7. So they all have numbers, okay? OpenDNS is a service that will work so that your router, so at your home, if you're connected to the internet, you have like a cable modem or something like that. If you have more than one computer in the house, you probably have a router that plugs into that cable modem. And then the computers either connect to that router, which is just something that directs traffic. It plugs into that router either with a cable that you hook your computer into, or maybe you've got wireless inside your house so that all the phones can log into the internet using the house network, and all the computers, laptops, you can sit in any part of the house and use the wireless. So the router, you can program your router to use this service called OpenDNS, and this is bought by a company named Cisco. And what you can do is have an account. It's very inexpensive. It's super cheap. You ought to have this in every house, in my opinion. And there is an alternative to it called SafeDNS. So if you want to check safeDNS.com, I happen to use OpenDNS because I've used a long time. The church uses OpenDNS. And so what this does is if you try to access a site that has content that you want filtered or prohibited, it blocks that request. And the user gets a message in their browser saying this request has been blocked and your administrator has been notified. So if you try to go to a porn site here using the internet at the church, I get an email telling me what you did and where you were trying to go and what your device name was that did it. So there's accountability built in. Same thing, if one of my kids were to try to access a prohibited site, I'd get that information. Now, you need to understand that sometimes your kids may be trying to access a site that's perfectly legit, and maybe they have the maturity level to view a certain thing, and they're blocked. And so what I've told my kids is, if you're blocked from something you really need, come to me. You and I will sit down together and look at the site, and if it's appropriate, I can put in a specific exception for that site to say allow that site through. Maybe I've blocked social networking, but I want them to have access to something else. Maybe I've blocked any repositories to pictures, but this is a site that just has general art information or something like that. You can put in an exception for certain sites. But you need to do this because your router is the one thing that stands between you and the internet most of the time. Now, that doesn't, unfortunately, protect you from cell phones. We'll talk about cell phones in a moment. Because cell phones have another route to the internet, which is just to go through your cell carrier. Okay? But your computers in your house ought to be using one of these services because it makes it more difficult. Now, one thing you need to understand is that you never rely on one layer of protection for your computers. You need multiple layers. That's a very important principle. So another thing you can do is put something on the PC itself that also does filtering and also provides accountability. And so two of the real good ones, and there's others as well, but you can go to Covenant Eyes, and so the URL is there, it's covenanteyes.com/family. You can go there, you can buy a membership, it will protect every member of your family, you can put as many as PCs as that you have, and it will block certain kinds of site. I believe it also works, I know it works on the iPhone, I'm not sure about Android phones, but it does work on those phones as well. And you put the software on the phone, you put the software on the computers, and then it filters out certain kinds of sites even before it could get to OpenDNS. And then OpenDNS gives you another layer of protection. And then also it will notify you as administrator if someone's trying to get to one of those sites. I use a product called F-Secure Safe because it's both an antivirus program and also has parental controls. And one of the things I like about F-Safe is for younger children, you can not only block what they can see on the internet, you can also determine how many hours a day they can be on the internet. You can say, I want this kid to only be on the internet 4 hours a day. They don't need to be on it 8 hours a day. Meanwhile, you got another kid who's going to college and they're doing all the research for their papers. They need sometimes 8, 10, 12 hours a day to do their schoolwork. So you can up the number. I also can restrict the time. I'm a firm believer that evil loves darkness, and I don't see a lot of point to having internet access after dark. And so, there's no reason for kids to have internet access at 2 o'clock in the morning. They should be asleep, you know, getting healthy rest. So you may need to block that as well. But these two things, whether you're using F-Secure or Covenant Eyes, they can protect your phones, they can protect your PCs, etc. Now, another thing, we have a rule at our house, if you're on the internet, you need to be in a public place. In other words, you need to be out in the living room or out in the schoolroom. There's not supposed to be internet access in the bedroom. And I don't want to find out that's happening, because I can restrict your access all kinds of ways if you violate that. Now, here's an example of OpenDNS that I talked about a minute ago. This is just a screenshot from my router, and those are the IP addresses of the OpenDNS servers. And so I tell my router, if anybody types in a URL and you're going to go look up the IP address, you have to go out here to resolve those IP addresses. And that lets OpenDNS then resolve those things and determine if they're bad sites. And they've got all kinds of filtering. So I know you probably can't see that, but for example, it can block pornography, photo sharing, radio, search engine, software technology, you know, obviously nudity, dating, adware, adult themes. So what you do is you put a check mark by everything you want to block, and you don't put a check mark by the stuff that maybe you want to, the categories that maybe you want to allow through. And then, you know, over there on the right side of the screen is an example of a report. So I pulled a report, and there was some computer in our network or some phone in our network was trying to go to Snapchat at some point, and that happens to be prohibited on our OpenDNS account. And so, you know, now I could look up if I wanted to and see, you know, what was the device that maybe was trying to use that. Now, I'm not saying if you use Snapchat, you're evil. Just so happens that was one of the categories that was automatically blocked by OpenDNS. So if I knew somebody had a need for it, I would need to ascertain what was their need and was it a legitimate need and why are they using it. And if I wanted to, I can unblock it. Now, we also have issues today with online media. We don't really watch commercial television in our house, but you know, the TVs have connected access to Netflix and Amazon. Well, you can go out to Netflix and go into your account settings and you can say, don't display movies that have a rating at this level or above. Okay, so let me just tell you, if the movie's made by Netflix, you probably not ought to watch it. I think there are exactly two series on Netflix that are decent. You know, there's Fuller House, you know, is pretty clean most of the time. There's one other, it's kind of a health-related series. But generally speaking, if it's made by Netflix, it's usually TV-14 is the rating, or TV-14 MA, which means mature audiences only. You just should block that. So you can decide whether you're going to allow only G movies, in which case your Netflix queue will be pretty small, or you're going to allow G and PG, but not PG-13, etc. And you can go to each device that's capable of running Netflix, and you can set that variable so that you can only watch things of a certain level rating. Amazon has a similar service, so if you get Amazon Instant Video because you've got an Amazon Prime account, you can watch ton of movies for free, and you can always buy additional movies, but you can set a 5-digit PIN code on your Amazon account that means that they can't watch or they can't rent or buy a movie without that PIN code. And you can also say that anything above PG, for example, would require someone to enter that 5-digit code in order for them to be able to watch that. And you can, you know, if you think your kids have gotten hold of the code, you can change the code. But that's a good thing to make sure that, you know, there are movies, and you know there are some war movies, some of which are really realistic, and they're rated R, and maybe you want to watch it for the historical value, but it's the blood and gore that made it that. Well, then you would have to enter the code to be able to watch that, and you as parents could preview it before you determined whether or not it was appropriate for your children. But just get that set up. Also, there's other filtering services. So ClearPlay. ClearPlay basically works in two ways. We have a DVD player, two DVD players actually from ClearPlay. And if you stick a DVD in and it's not from Universal Studios, because Universal Studios doesn't closed caption their films, and so you can't block it. But what it does is it reads the closed captioning information on the film. And so if there's a profanity in there, it can block it. And then also at some point, somebody from ClearPlay went through and watched the movie and put down the timing signals for where there was nudity or where there was maybe immodesty of some kind. And your filter can determine which of those things you're blocking out. And what it'll do is it'll just skip that portion of the film. So, you know, all of a sudden you're going along and there's 30 seconds of skip thing. And that's fine because you're skipped out on the trash. There's a lot of movies that would be good movies if they just leave the garbage out, right? And so you can do that. So if you watch a movie from Google, so you purchase a movie through Google, you can actually filter the movie off of the internet coming from the Google streaming services. You can filter it before it gets to your device with ClearPlay. And you can also do this with DVDs that you maybe rent or got. And then there's the service called VidAngel, and these folks, it's a Mormon-based thing, but it is a valuable tool for us in spite of that. And VidAngel's under a lot of lawsuits right now because a lot of these movie companies want to be able to force you to watch garbage. They don't want you to block the profanity. They don't want you to block the immodesty. They don't want you to block the nudity. They don't want you to block the suggested scenes. So they're trying to force this company out of business, really. Now, and for a while, you know, basically what you could do is you could rent or buy the video from VidAngel, and then they would filter it for you, but then you could return it for credit. Well, that pretty much got put to a stop because effectively, even though you were buying the movie and selling it back to them, the courts looked at it and said, well, you're just getting around these laws about, you know, that you have to buy something to have the license to view it. So that's not there. But now what it does is you can actually hook it up to your Netflix account or your Amazon account. You can watch a movie from Netflix or watch a movie from Amazon, and the movie will be filtered by VidAngel, and you can adjust that filter so that you're only seeing the stuff you want. So you go into VidAngel, and you can specify, for example, you know, what level of things, for example, there was a category I noticed this morning called blasphemy, and one of the things, so what they do is they avoid anything that has the word God in it. Well, if a character says, thank God, I kind of like that, but that's one of the categories, so you can uncheck that, and that way you'll still see thank God, but anything you got checked will be filtered out. And so you could go in here and eliminate all the phrases, all the kinds of language, all the kinds of scenes, all, you know, and under the immodesty category, it'll actually tell you whether the woman's skirt was too high or her cleavage was too low, etc. And you can determine what you're going to filter out, how much you're going to allow. So it's a great tool for the rest of us to use. And I'm hoping that VidAngel eventually gets their issues resolved. Now, one of the things you need to do to protect your family is maintain accountability. You need to focus on accountability. You need to know what the family's watching, what family members are looking at on the internet. If you walk in your room and your spouse immediately covers up their computer, maybe you need to figure out what they're looking at, because there shouldn't be anything that we're so ashamed of that we immediately have to cover it up. I will tell you, however, if your wife's leaning over to kiss you, Don't let her break your notebook computer. Shut the lid first as she's leaning over, because bad things can happen to your lids. Look at the reports. If you get email reports, go look once a week. Now, I know we all have too much stuff to do, okay? But I think it's worth taking 30 minutes of your time every week to go out to OpenDNS or go out to F-Secure and review the reports to see, is anybody trying to get the stuff they shouldn't? And then you figure out who that is and go talk to them about what's going on. I keep internet access in the open because that helps, the siblings to be aware of things. And then, have some kind of software that reports any violations to the parents. You can also go on your router itself, and you can put in on many routers. I have a Cisco router. I can go in on my router, and I can put in a time restriction. So in this case, I added a computer this morning, and I restricted it to a particular time. And also, I put in some keywords down at the bottom. I said, if any of these keywords appears on the website, don't let it through. So your routers can do filtering. So yeah, at my house, I've got F-Secure Safe. I have filtering on my router, and I have OpenDNS because the devil will find a way through. Let's at least make it hard for him, okay? I've had the devil find his way through before on our network, and that's why I now have multiple layers of protection. Here's an example. So my router is that bottom screen there where I've highlighted the times that they are able to be on the internet, basically daylight waking hours, nothing in the evening. That top is a screenshot from F-Secure just to show you that I can do the same thing there. And in fact, I can actually say, okay, this particular example shows 7 hours per day. Now, not all of your children need the same restrictions. And I'll talk more in a minute about when a child's ready for the internet. But basically, different kids need different levels of restrictions. Those kids going to college are going to need more access than your kids that are in the second or third grade. It just makes sense. So you need to put on some age-appropriate restrictions. And again, I highly recommend that they don't have late-night access to the internet. It's a problem. Another thing you do is restrict MAC addresses. Now, I have done this and not done it. It's a little bit of a pain to set up, but basically a MAC address, MAC is short for machine addressable code, but basically every network card, including the one that's built into your cell phone, has this machine address. It's signed by the vendor, and they're unique to every vendor. So if you look at a MAC address, you can actually tell what the manufacturer of that network interface was. And everyone's unique. There's no two MAC addresses alike in the universe, okay? And so what you do is you can create a list on your router saying only these MAC addresses are permitted on the network. Now, why would you want to do that? I want to make sure the only things that connect to my router are devices that I've authorized to connect to my router because I've already put the F-Secure Safe software on them, and I've already made sure that they're using OpenDNS. And let me tell you, devices can creep in to your home without you knowing it. One of my kids found a device in a trash can that somebody else had thrown away, and he picked it up, and lo and behold, one day I'm looking, and there's a MAC address I haven't seen before. And so I traced it down. It was kind of a out-of-place address because there's only one authorized Apple address on my network, and this was the second Apple device. And I had to pin that person down and say, where did you get this? And I said, you're not supposed to be using it on the internet without my putting the software on to protect it. So one thing you can do is find all your devices, figure out which ones are which. You authorize only those devices for the network, and then nobody else can use your network. Now, that sounds inhospitable, I know. But it's worth being a little inhospitable to protect people that come under your roof, okay? And you can make other provisions for guest networks, etc. Now, another thing you have to think about when children are young, they want to email their buddies. They want to email their friends. And so there's two good possibilities for this. There's one called TocoMail, tocomail.com. And then the one we used is called KidsMail. It's kidsemail.org. And what this does is several things. First of all, if somebody emails your kid and they're not on the approved list, you get a notification saying so-and-so is trying to email your child. And then you can figure out who that is and determine, is this somebody I want emailing my child? Now, that you may think I'm like the Nazis here controlling who can contact my kids. But listen, my kids are under my protection. They're under my authority, and it's my job to protect them from wrong influences, okay? I don't want them unknowingly texting a 44-year-old pervert that just found an email address on the internet, okay? And I want to make sure that the people who are emailing that child of mine, that they're a proper influence, that they're godly, that they're under biblical authority in their home as well. So you can authorize it, and you can authorize traffic in both directions. Who can your kid email, and who can email your kid? And then it'll even provide a copy of that email should you choose to read it. You can turn on that feature so that every time they get an email, you can look and see what they're getting. Now, is that a violation of privacy? Well, listen, your privacy ends at my front door. When you come in, I have a right to know what my network is being used for, especially where it influences my children. So this is a good resource for you parents if you're wanting to make sure that only appropriate friends are emailing your kids. So I highly recommend those services. Now, let's talk about, when are kids ready for the internet? This is a good thing to know. So I have a few quick guidelines. One is they ought to have a strong, genuine commitment to the Lord. If they're not caring about spiritual things, if they're not caring about being part of family devotionals, if they're not caring about the Bible, if they don't memorize Scripture, they probably don't need to be on the internet. Because let's face it, I don't care how many levels of protection you have between the internet and you, eventually it boils down to a matter of the heart. Let me say that again. Doesn't matter how many levels of protection you have, it boils down to a matter of the heart. And if your child's heart is for the Lord, they can still make wise decisions, even when the devil sneaks through. Okay? Secondly, they need to have a right relationship with parents. Now, if you're one of those parents that just barks out the rules, and you don't love the kids, and you don't teach God's principles to the kids, and all you're doing is barking out the rules, well, guess what's going to happen? Over time, they're just going to resent you, and they're going to rebel against everything you're trying to control. I'm not here to tell you, put the thumb screws down on your kids and tighten everything down, batten the hatches, control everything. I'm saying protect them. Okay, same reason I wear a firearm every day is I'm protecting my family, and I'm protecting you this morning. Now, the last one is one my son suggested, and I thought, well, that's kind of an interesting suggestion. And he said, you need to have the ability to read a fairly thick biography and write a book report on it. Why would that be a good test for a kid having access to the internet? Because it shows that they have developed some critical thinking ability. It shows that they know how to analyze and interpret what they're seeing, and they're able to put it in words and verbalize it. Now, that's a good skill to have on the internet because some people are so gullible they believe everything on the internet and they don't know how to fact check. Okay? Other people, they just, if they see it, it just comes in and instantly programs their brain because they lack discernment. Well, if you know how to write a book report on a biography and maybe you find that character's spiritual strengths and their spiritual weaknesses, and you're able to analyze that in their life, well, you have enough intelligence and maturity maybe to be able to do the same kind of thing on the internet. No, so once again, and I've already said this a couple times, but two things, again, I want to emphasize. You need to have multiple layers of protection. Now, I realize some of you don't have kids old enough to be worried about this, but guess what? Mom and Dad are on the internet. You need to protect each other, too, so think about it now. A lot of browsers actually have another thing you can go into the browser settings, and you can set safe searches only. And by the way, if you use F-Secure, you can replace the search engine so that rather than using Google or Yahoo, that you replace it with the F-Secure Safe, and it will filter the search results that come back to you. I wish Google would do that. Google does have a setting, by the way, where you can go into a person's Google account and put some content restrictions on it. But I believe in having browser protection, on-device software protection, DNS protection, protection at the router, time restrictions. In other words, make the devil go find an easier target, but not your family. Okay. The second thing is you've got to have that child's heart. You need to have their heart in terms of their relationship with you so that there's open communications, so that if they do see something they weren't supposed to see, they can come to you and say, Dad, this popped up on my screen today, and I don't think we're supposed to be seeing that. Good, because then I need to know to go block it. So you've got to have communications with the child and communications with your spouse. Guys, if you see something on the internet you're not supposed to see and you don't tell your wife, you lose God's protection in your life, and you're more likely to become addicted to what you saw, whereas if you take that sin out from behind your jacket, behind your where you're covering it, and you tell your wife so that there's some openness and accountability, and wives, when they do this, appreciate them for their openness, their transparency, their honesty, then that sin loses power on their lives when they expose it to you. So have accountability. Get them to memorize Scripture. As soon as the kid's old enough, put them in Faith Bible Institute, because after 3 years of really understanding God's Word, they'll have the wisdom to make right decisions. I personally don't think FBI should be optional. I think as a parent, every parent should put their child through FBI. Have the heart of your child. Now, you also need to protect your computers from viruses. So I've run into this one with someone in our extended family. And what happened one day, he's just browsing the internet, and all of a sudden this pop-up comes up. First of all, you should block pop-ups. They're annoying. They make me irritable when something pops up on my screen I didn't ask for. But this pop-up comes up on a screen, and it says, "You have a computer virus. You've been affected. Click here to resolve the problem." Well, because he wasn't tech savvy and he didn't understand this was just a marketing scheme, he clicks on the link. Well, it takes him to a software, and it takes him, this page shows him all this bad information about this virus, and then it has him click, and he spends $29.95 to buy the antivirus software. And instead of actually buying antivirus software, he's downloading a virus to his computer, and now every time he turns on his computer, random porn images started coming up. So he had me, he called me, and I connected to his computer over the internet, which was a really dumb thing to do, because then my computer got infected by the virus too, so it's very virulent. And fortunately, I've had a lot of experiences taking down viruses. In fact, as my 15 minutes of fame was, I don't know if you've ever seen the TV show Walker, Texas Ranger with Chuck Norris in it, I saved season 6 from losing all their scripts because they'd been infected by a virus both in Irving and out in California, and I got the viruses off their computers and brought back their scripts for season 6, and Chuck gave me an 8x10 glossy, and I got a t-shirt and a cap, and it says Walker, Texas Ranger. That was the closest I got. I did get to go on the set here in Irving, and they were about to film, and I went on the set, and it was like 45 degrees in there because they had these giant air conditioners coming in, and I thought, I appreciate it. I asked them, so why is it so cold in here? And they said, well, when we start filming, we have to turn on these lights, and they generate a lot of heat. And I started thinking about, you know, CJ, the character CJ. She was kind of thin as it was. And I'm thinking, that poor lady had to be freezing to death. She really was a good actress, because I'd have been in there going, trying to do my lines like this. It was that cold. But at any rate, so be aware of the fact that you need a reputable antivirus software. And again, I use F-Secure because it's kind of an all-in-one package, and it not only works on your PCs, it works on your phones, whether they're iPhones or Android. So highly recommend that. Now, here's something else you need to do, and this kind of goes to the heart issue. Everybody in your family needs to understand this concept that there is nothing hidden from God. There's nothing hidden from God. Hebrews 4:13 says, "Neither is there any creature that is not manifest in His sight, but all things are naked and opened unto the eyes of Him with whom we have to do." It doesn't matter if your wife didn't see you on the internet. It doesn't matter if your dad doesn't know what you're doing on the internet. God knows. You still got to deal with Him. You might suffer the loss of eternal rewards because you wasted your life looking at stuff you shouldn't. You need to cultivate in your kids this concept that God always watches. I remember when my kids were young and we had a discipline chart we often used, and for every infraction I would take them to the chart, and there was a Bible verse. And in fact, I've got a few copies of a book I wrote that are back here in the office, and if you didn't read the rest of the book, you could read that one chapter on disciplining your children. And there, for every infraction, there was one verse on what God said was, why God said that behavior was wrong, and there was another verse on what the right behavior was. So we'd always read them two Bible verses. Why two Bible verses? Because in Ephesians, Paul talks about putting off the old man and putting on the new man. So anytime you correct your children, they need to understand what God's perspective is on their sin. They also need to understand what God's perspective is on the correct behavior. And then there was a correction attitude. So maybe the kid just slams the door too loud. Well, they get the joy of opening and closing the door quietly 50 times or 10 times or 20 times, whatever the number, and they'll learn that behavior from that mechanical action. They won't slam the door anymore. Other times, they start whining. And in my house, you got a teaspoonful of Cruden's horseradish, the refrigerated kind from the grocery section. And, of course, it's very aromatic, and it opens up your sinuses. And it burns a little bit. And you know why? Because horseradish, by the way, was one of the bitter herbs served on Passover night. And it was to remind them of the bitterness that was caused by their sins and how it hurt the heart of God and their sins. And what I would do is I'd give them a spoonful of that horseradish because whining is a sin of the tongue. The fact is, I may need to go home and get some horseradish today for myself. Anyway, but it's a sin of the tongue. And then I would say, now make a list of 20 of God's blessings, and then you can have a drink of water. Kids can be really grateful really quick with horseradish. My only problem was that two or three of my kids actually learned to like horseradish after a while. They were exposed to it so much. And then you got to get more creative. So you go to rooster sauce or, you know, some other thing. But another thing is, make sure that you pay attention to your spouse. Your spouse can see traps for you that you can't see. My wife, in the past, when I was younger and I was working in a hospital, she was often aware of the wrong motives of some of the nurses with whom I worked. And I would tell her about what happened at work, and she would say, oh, you need to watch that person. Okay. Similarly, I'm aware of traps, of things that, you know, might pull her heart away from the Lord. So you need to be aware, spend time talking to each other, be accountable for one another. Now, here's another verse, Proverbs 5:21. For the ways of the man are before the eyes of the Lord. He pondereth all his going. His own iniquity shall take the wicked himself. He shall be holden with the cords of his sin. So basically everything we do, our iniquities, by the way, are the things we do that are self-willed. I really thought I was going to get through a lot more of this sermon today. Let me just go a little further and we'll save the rest for next time. This is also not only a covered trap, it's a coveting trap. Now, Paul talks to Timothy, and he says, but they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare, there's that word again, and into many foolish and hurtful lusts which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money, notice it doesn't say for money, it says the love of money is the root of all evil. And literally in Greek it means all kinds of evil. So I've inserted kinds of because that's actually correct. All kinds of evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. So there's the internet is, and I'm not, again, I'm not picking on the internet, because you can do covetous going to the local mall. You can do covetousness going to stores that you just like to window shop at. But let's just talk about the internet for a minute. Everybody and his brother is selling something on the internet. And sometimes that's not the best thing. I have a little trouble going to gunbroker.com. I have to be real careful about that because I find stuff that I don't have and don't need, but I want, you know, if I'm on there very long. But, you know, there's a lot of, you know, and Amazon loves me. That I'm on a first name basis with a UPS driver, okay? So you need to, you have to be careful about not coveting things that you see. Again, pornography is a form of covetousness. Then greed and marketing, they're playing to this idea of covetousness, and online gambling playing to this. And then sometimes social media gets involved in the game too, because they're now, if you go to Facebook, you see almost as many ads as you see posts from people, and that's an effective way to market to a lot of folks. But also now when you buy something on Amazon, the first thing when you check out is they say, do you want to tell people on Facebook what you just bought? No, I don't want you to know what I just bought. That's my business. It's not your business. But you know, there are people who do that because, hey, I just bought so-and-so. Then all their friends think, well, I need to buy one of those too. So it's the idea that it, covetousness. A third characteristic of this kind of trap is it is a rationalized trap. They rationalize their conduct. See, the wicked often know what they do is wicked, but they don't really care anyway. In fact, as I'm amazed at the people who will stand up and speak to a public audience and let the video be recorded, and they'll say things like, well, I know I'm going to hell, but I don't care. You know, there are wicked people just like that. They just don't care. You probably know somebody like that. They're just going to do what they want to do, and they don't care because they don't really understand just how bad hell is really going to be, or they think it's not real. But for Christians, when we sin, we often have to go through some kind of rationalization process. And you would say, well, you know, that kind of feels in that fuzzy gray area. If I was fully convinced that this was wrong, I wouldn't do it. But something you know in your heart is wrong, your brain says, well, you know, that's not black and white. That's kind of a gray area. I am firmly convinced that when we stand before the Almighty, we will discover there were no gray areas. You think about that for a little bit. Just think, if that bird said, well, if I thought that were really a trap, I wouldn't go into it. It's kind of what we do. And we make excuses for our conduct. By the way, I love that poster on the right. Excuses don't burn calories. I make a lot of excuses about going to the gym sometimes. But we make excuses for not doing the things we know we should do. We make excuses for doing the things we know we shouldn't do. And we also say, nobody will know. And those are kind of the things that we rationalize. It's also a compromising kind of trap. The bird gets lured in bit by bit. He doesn't just immediately fly right to the center of the trap. He flies to the outside and he kind of looks at things for a while. He'll probably walk around it for a while. If he sees a piece of dead meat lying on the ground, he's gonna stare at it for a while. Even vultures, they don't just pounce right on the dead meat. They land some distance away. They kind of circle in, and then if it's like a dead animal, they'll actually peck at its eyes to make sure the thing's really dead before they do anything. But it's this idea of you start by getting close to it and you get closer. Y'all remember the story of Lot? That when he had to pick where to go, he says, well, he looked toward the well-watered plains of Sodom. Well, and so he says, I'll go that way. But he gets to the plains. The next thing we know, he's pitched close to the city. Next thing we know, he's at the gates of the city as one of the elders of the city. And now he's living inside the city. He kept getting closer and closer and closer to compromise that led to destruction in his family. We often think these little compromises that we make at first are harmless. And so you watch a movie and it's got a little bit of evil in it. But then what happens and you don't realize is you become more tolerant of that kind of evil. You become more tolerant of the language. You become more tolerant of the sexual situations. You become more tolerant of the false theology. And after a while, you're just not even noticing it anymore. Families and individuals suffer after a series of small compromises. Most of us don't just fail immediately. Most men who go into adultery, they don't just one day decide to commit adultery. They've been in mental adultery for a while. They've been looking at other women for a while. They've been looking at pornography for a while. It's not a sudden break, okay? And the same thing's true of any other kind of sin. And of course, we have an example of an entire church that did this thing. The church at Pergamos is called the Compromising Church. And in Revelation 2, it says this about them. And unto the angel of the church in Pergamos write, I have a few things against thee, because thou hast there them that hold the doctrine of Balaam, who taught Balak to cast a stumbling block before the children of Israel, to eat things sacrificed unto idols, and to commit fornication. And basically, if you remember that story about Balaam and Balak, Balaam basically taught King Balak, here's how you get Israel to compromise. You get some of your women to marry some of their men, and those women take with them their idolatry and their practices and get the men tolerant of those things. And before you know it, Israel will have departed from God. And once they've departed from God, they'll be easily conquered. And that's what happened. That's exactly what happened. But here's a whole church that did the thing. Now, the thing with compromises in media that you need to think about and the activities of your family in is we usually start with this phrase, it's just a little. Well, just what? Just a little, few curse words, just a little immorality, just a little false humor, or false theology, just a little crass humor, just a little immodesty. That top picture there is a container of mercury. How much mercury is little enough that it doesn't do damage to your body? Well, this, is the theory behind vaccinations, right? Still today, and it has been outlawed, and so now they've replaced thimerosal, which is a form of mercury, with aluminum, which also binds to your brain and causes Alzheimer's later in life, but they're replacing mercury with aluminum. Wonderful. How much? But still, you get the flu vaccine today, it's got mercury in it. How much mercury is okay for your body? The answer is zero. But we say, it's just a little bit. And that's what doctors will tell you. It's such a minuscule amount. What they don't tell you is that mercury doesn't leave your body unless you're doing chelated minerals or there are ways to detoxify it. But in general, mercury stays in your body the rest of your life. How much poison is enough, okay? Now, One other thing to know about the devil is the traps are customized. You don't use the same kind of bait for a skunk as you would a squirrel. And you don't use the same kind of trap to catch, maybe to lure an elk or a deer in to your sights as you would use to catch a badger. Okay, so you customize the trap to the animal. Well, the Satan's really smart. He knows how to customize traps specifically for you. And one of the things Satan does with homeschoolers and conservative Christians is he likes to trap us in our pride. It's our high moral standards. It's the quality of the young people we want to turn out. And our standards, if they're not from inside the heart and they're from outside in terms of rules and regulations, we'll walk around kind of looking down our noses at everybody else, not realizing that it's there but for the grace of God go I. Okay? And so you'll get a little attitude of pride. I like this parking sign. It says, "Parking for perfect people, no exceptions." I would hope that space is always empty. Because nobody should park there. If you're kind of melancholy, and some of you have read Tim LaHaye's book on temperaments, and he talks about the sanguine temperament, the choleric temperament, which is the clipboard and whistle guy, that's me. And then there's the phlegmatic, who's kind of laid back and nothing phases them too much. And then there's the melancholy, which are great musicians, but they tend to have mood swings, etc. If you're melancholy, he knows you're more prone to depression. That's what he'll use. You tailor the trap to the bird. I'm going to go ahead and finish because we're moving pretty quick now. So, a coated trap. The devil loves to sugarcoat stuff. Y'all remember Mary Poppins? And that wonderful song, "A spoonful of what makes the medicine go down?" Spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down. It was popularized in song. Well, the devil loves to sugarcoat stuff. You see good family movies, and yet somewhere in the movie, they force compromise down your throat. This is why if you're going to use online movies, you need some kind of filtering process. You cheer for the sweet romantic love between two people, and you forget that one of them is married, and what they should do is leave that relationship and go make things right with their spouse. Remember, the devil doesn't just attack us spiritually, he also attacks us physically. And I don't want to make any of you upset, but you need to be thinking about your sugar consumption. Let me just show you. This is something interesting. Paul said this, 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 12. He says, "All things are lawful to me." And he was actually talking in the context of dieting, whether, should he eat. Should he eat the same meat the Gentiles were eating, or should he only eat the meat the Jews were eating? And if you know anything about Paul, he actually climbed all over Peter's case one day because Peter was eating one way till the Jews came to town, and then Peter sat at a different table and ate a different food because he was trying to impress the Jews. He was being kind of a hypocrite. And so Paul climbs his case about it. Well, he says, "All things are lawful, but not all things are expedient. All things are lawful for me, but I'll not be brought under the power of any." How many of you have sweet cravings? Okay, you don't have to raise your hand. But a lot of people have sweet cravings. Now, there's two things about sweet cravings. And the reality is your body's not craving sweets. Your body's craving potassium. Because what happens is in order to store excess glucose from the desserts you've already been eating, in order for it to store as glycogen in your liver, you have to take those glucose molecules, and for every one glucose molecule, you have to have one potassium molecule in order to store it in the liver. And so what happens is people eat sweets, they get all this blood sugar, and the liver's trying to store it as glycogen in the liver, and there's not enough potassium in the diet. You need 4,700 milligrams of potassium a day, which means you have to eat between 7 and 10 cups of green vegetables a day. Most of you are not doing that. You don't have enough potassium, and so the liver can't store it as glycogen. So what does the liver do? It just shuttles it off and stores it in fat. So you eat desserts, you get fat, and then you have cravings, even though you just had dessert. You have cravings a few hours later. That Milky Way bar did not do the trick. Okay? Why? Because you needed potassium. You should have been eating an avocado. And instead, you get a Snickers bar this time because the Milky Way bar didn't do it last time. Okay? So we need to understand that. But sugar is actually an addictive drug. In fact, it's 8 times more addictive than cocaine. Now, you've heard about how hard it is for people to break cocaine addiction. But it's 8 times more addictive than cocaine. Not only in humans, but same thing's true in rats. Rats can give up cocaine easier than they can give up sugar. And it's an amazing, amazing concept. Another thing you need to think about is, where do you want your brain to be in its old age? Because sugar consumption destroys what's called brain-derived neurotrophic factor, or BDNF, which is what keeps you thinking clearly. And so there's a direct relationship between sugar consumption and dementia. And kids are besieged with sugar. You see the biggest category there, green, is soft drinks. A single sugared soft drink has 14 teaspoons of sugar. Can you imagine getting the sugar bowl and you feed yourself 14 teaspoons of sugar? Well, you're getting the same thing in one 12-ounce can of Coke. And people don't realize that. And they are pounding their pancreas. And the pancreas is having to put all this insulin. And insulin is a pro-inflammatory hormone. And it causes inflammation in the body. And diabetics, by the way, don't need to focus on getting the blood sugar down. They need to focus on how to lower their insulin levels down. But to do that, you got to lower blood sugar too. Fruit juice. Here's a startling fact. One glass of fruit juice, actually, because of the fructose content in it, and it does, you know, orange juice has phytonutrients and stuff in it, but one glass of orange juice has more sugar than one can of Coke. And your body doesn't know the difference between them. Yogurt, you see, breakfast cereal is a huge one. Sugar and chocolate, there's a lot of big categories there. Now, here's something just to take away with you, because and we're kind of sensitive to it because we have a family member right now that has cancer. But there was a guy named Otto Warburg, and he discovered how cancer cells live. And basically, a cancer cell walls itself off. It becomes insulin resistant. It walls itself off, and when it does get sugar, it uses fermentation, and it produces pyruvates, which are a form of energy by the cell. But basically, it uses fermentation. It relies on sugar. It ferments the sugar to produce the energy it needs to grow and divide and build more cancer cells. Cancer cells cannot live on fat. Whereas if you go on like a ketogenic diet or you're doing intermittent fasting so you have long times between meals, your body can switch from burning glucose to burning fat. And those fats are called ketones. Cancer cells can't, every healthy cell in your body works off of ketones. And your brain actually prefers ketones to sugar. But cancer cells can only do sugar. So guess what? You cut the sugar out of your diet, you're starving your cancer cells. You're helping your good cells, but you're starving your cancer cells. Okay, and this is an important thing. The other thing that cancer can't live with is oxygen. Fermentation doesn't like oxygen. That's why if you make sauerkraut, you have to keep the lid on the jar or the lid on the crock because you need to keep the oxygen out or the fermentation process goes awry and you don't have good fermentation. Now, by the way, there's a lot of interesting treatments that are newly available for cancer. One is to hook you up to an IV and give you high intravenous doses of vitamin C. Guess what? That's a water-soluble vitamin. It'll get out of your system for a while, but high doses of vitamin C actually destroy cancer cells, but they don't bother healthy cells. That's a pretty cool thing. Another thing is if you are going to get chemo, instead of getting the kind of chemo that just causes you to lose all your hair and gets you totally sick, they can now give you low-dose chemo, but they'll give you a shot of insulin with it. Now, I'm not a fan of insulin shots, okay? But when you get a shot of insulin, it forces the chemo into the cells and the healthy cells will survive, but the cancer cells will die. But they can use a lower dose of chemo that's not so hard on you, but it'll be more effective. Another thing they're doing these days is oxygen therapy. They hook you up to what's called a plasmapheresis machine. They pull the blood out of your body, and then while the blood's out of your body, they inject it with high amounts of oxygen. It goes back into your body, and oxygen basically causes oxidation. We would call that rust. And what will happen is it will oxidize the cancer cells to the point they die. But your healthy cells will say, oh good, we got more oxygen. Because healthy cells use oxygen to make energy. Cancer cells, it just kills them. So there are treatments. You don't have to just immediately go through high-dose chemo and radiation. There's alternatives. The fact of the matter is, as a society, we're sugar addicted. And listen, anything that's processed, flours, breads, high fructose corn syrup, maltodextrin, agave, a lot of people think it's healthy. It's just sugar. Look at that graph on the right. That's sugar consumption. So the average, by the year 2000, the average American was eating 70 pounds of sugar a year. Well, guess what? When you eat white bread or even whole wheat bread, your body takes those carbs, and what does it do? It converts it to glucose, which is what? Sugar. And do you realize how many different kinds of sugars there are? These are all different names for sugars. Every one of these is a kind of sugar, and there's some more names for sugar. There's different kinds of sugars there. The one that I find in a lot of health foods, and you think that are health foods, is maltodextrin, and it's just a kind of sugar. Lastly, it is a corrupting trap. Satan employs people that we respect, and then they fall, and we lose our moral compass. You need to have the right kind of heroes in your life. That's why it's important for your kids to grow up reading Christian biographies, because it tells the good, bad, and the ugly, where these people had failures, but where they succeeded. They need real heroes. Please don't let their heroes be the guy on the basketball court or the guy on the football field or some political guy, because sooner or later, those people are going to fail. Let's make sure their heroes are people whose lives have already been lived and their consequences of their lives have already been played out. And he wants to lead us astray. He wants to decoy. He wants us to give in to different corrupting influences. You need to know who your kids' friends are. Don't let them have secret friendships. Understand that social media emails could be influencing them the wrong way. They could have heroes that make compromises in their life. You don't want those compromises to come in your life. None of you should have a wrong focus on any human, and that includes your pastors. Don't ever put your pastors on a pedestal, because sooner or later we're going to fall off the pedestal. We don't want you throwing rocks at us. So make your hero Jesus Christ. Make him the reason you come to church and not the pastor. Another thing that's really bad for kids is if their parents do something stupid and do something wrong and the parents don't ask forgiveness. They need to see you're human too. They need to hear you ask forgiveness. They need to see you clear your conscience, because if you don't do that, they'll grow up to be bitter. And you need to protect them also from anyone who doesn't recognize God's authority in the family, people that are trying to go around mom and dad. I said the last one, but this is the last one. It's a cursing trap. If the devil can't get us to compromise, and he can't get us to fail in any way, he'll have somebody else curse us to discourage us. He'll have somebody say something bad to you. You'll be criticized. You'll be taken down a notch. So when somebody does that, and I had this happen to me recently, where I was basically attacked by someone verbally, first in a public forum and then later privately, repeatedly. Well, first thing I had to do is see, was there any truth to what they were saying? Was there any valid criticism there? Had I lacked care when I did something? Did I think through what I was doing when I said a particular thing? And then if you try to see it from their point of view, and if you can, go to them and ask forgiveness for the thing that you believe you might have done to offend them. In other words, take the knife out of their hand by being humble and by asking forgiveness. Show them respect where possible. The Bible says, as far as it is possible, live peacefully with all men. Well, it's not possible to live peaceably with everybody. There are some people who are just always, that maybe they're enemies of God, so they're going to be your enemies too. But as far as it's possible, live peaceably with all men. And realize that there are some people who are just going to drag you down continually, because that's their mindset. They're just bitter, negative people. You can pray for them. You can be courteous to them. But sometimes you need to limit the extent of their influence on your life, because they'll just drag you down all the time. Probably most of us have worked with somebody like that in the past. Probably somebody, most of us have somebody in our family who's like that, that just every time they're around, they just kind of drain the energy out of you. And one of the things you need to do, some people get so freaked out about Facebook and all their friends on Facebook. Let me clue you in on something. God did not put us on the planet to make friends. He put us on the planet to make disciples. And there's a big difference. So your objective isn't to be friends with everybody who requests to be your friend on Facebook. Your objective is, if you're going to be on Facebook, you should be using it to encourage people in their faith, encourage people in their walk with God, to set for them, put out helpful resources that will maybe help them in their walk for the Lord. And remember what Daniel knew, that when a man's ways please the Lord, he makes even his enemies to be at peace with him. Make sure your ways please the Lord. And then if someone's not God's enemy, they've just been mad at you, if your ways please the Lord, he'll resolve that difference between you two brothers or you two sisters in Christ. He'll bring about that. Now, by the way, if somebody's God's enemies, they'll never be at peace with you. But man's way please the Lord. So, as Richard comes, here's my question to you, and I appreciate your patience this morning. Do you, any of you realize, after hearing the kinds of traps that Satan sets for us, that maybe your defenses are a little bit down in your family and you need to work on them? Are you protecting one another adequately in the areas of the internet? Are there things that are covered up that need to be brought out in the open so that sin loses its power over you? Are there areas that are causing you to compromise? Are there areas that are causing you to be bitter? Is there something in the lust of the flesh or the lust of the eyes or the pride or bitterness of life that you know a family member is suffering from? Do you realize you're in spiritual warfare? And is the devil even maybe attacking you physically and you know it's time for a lifestyle change? You know what? You belong to Jesus Christ because He purchased you body, soul, and spirit, right? Or I should say spirit, soul, and body, because that's the order that's in Scripture. You are not yours, for you have been bought with a price. Therefore, glorify God in your body and spirit, which are His. So we need to glorify God in every way. We need to be, if our body is the temple of God, folks, we need to take care of the temple.